It's the Brouhaha Podcast with Steve Jackson and Mark Carpenter.
It is Brouhaha. Today, our buddy Dave McLean is back. He sold Magnolia Brewing. Explain that one, man. Good to see you, brother.
Thanks for having me back. I guess it was just time. I think we talked about it last time I was on.
But, yeah.
Went through some tough times with our expansion and found some great people to come in and be stewards of the brand.
When did you start Magnolia?
1997.
Jeez. I'd forgotten it was that long ago. Also joining us from Banshee Wines up in Healdsburg, Baron Ziegler. Nice to meet you, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We love Banshee. As I mentioned to you before we got on the air, Terry Stark was here today, and you mentioned you ran into her out there. And I mentioned Banshee to her on the air, and I said, you're familiar with them, right? And she goes, oh, we love them.
And we love them back. We eat their restaurants all the time.
We need to, yes, indeed. And by the way, she broke the news that because we were talking about Willie's Wine Bar being is going to be coming before the end of the year over in Town and Country. And then I said, well, when Bird in the Bottle opened, you told me that's it. We're done. No more. Well, of course, they have to go through the whole process again because they want to rebuild Willie's Wine Bar. And I said, well, then now you're done, right? Once that reopens. And she goes, oh, no. In Railroad Square, they're going to have another restaurant called Grossman's Deli.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm not sure where in the square.
Matzo ball soup and pastrami and rye. Oh,
chopped chicken liver, my favorite.
Oh, my God. And those fish sandwiches, lox sandwiches.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. Anyway, she and Mark love Banshee. And we got to get you on our Wednesday award-winning California Wine Country show.
Because
I don't think
to.
You guys have been in.
We have not. No, we've
not. Dan Berger's my co-host. And
fantastic.
Yeah, okay, so we'll make
That'd
that
be great.
Happen.
Yeah, please.
All right. Let's start with Dave. Dave McLean. It's now Admiral Malting.
That's right.
Not molting.
Not molting.
No. That's molting. The Bird Rescue Center or something. I don't know what molting is. Okay.
Thing. Yeah, I don't know.
You sold Magnolia.
I know molting.
And explain what your new business is here.
I co-founded Admiral Maltings with my two partners are Ron Silberstein from Thirsty Bear Brewing Company in San Francisco and Curtis Davenport, who is our head maltster and the guy that makes the magic happen. We're raw barley actually turns into malt that brewers love. And so we're working with all NorCal farms, small family farms are all growing sustainably, some organically, some no-till. And they're growing malting varieties of barley that we are bringing to our facility in Alameda that we built last year. And
We're
using an old traditional practice called floor malting, which is where you spread it out and germinate it on a large floor. And
sounds like fun.
And turn it into brewer's malt.
So are you selling to brewers?
We're selling to breweries and distillers. We've sold to about 130 California brewers so far and about a dozen distilleries.
Holy crap. That's a lot, dude.
Well, until now, there hasn't been access to locally grown, locally malted barley malt, and that's the key ingredient in beer. You know, we like to say no malt, no beer.
And in the green room earlier, Mr. Carpenter, Mark Carpenter is, of course, back with us. You were telling me that barley malt is a big deal, and we all eat more than we know.
I think people eat a lot more barley malt than they realize, obviously, in a malted milk or malted.
You said it's in almost all the cereal.
Almost every cereal. If you read the ingredients, it'll be an ingredient cereal because it's the grains without that aren't malted have really very little flavor. And so by malting it, brewers have to malt it in order to it'll make sugar. In fact, Dave should probably explain the process. It's really interesting malting. But the idea is that all these Kellogg's and all those guys have big malt houses or big brew houses converting this malt into sugar and adding it to their cereal.
Really?
Yeah, read the ingredients. You'll see it almost everywhere.
When are we going to get cornflakes beer?
Well, you never know.
Yeah,
but we
nothing
have
some, would surprise
not
me.
Far off.
Yeah,
we have some great beers today from Seismic using Dave's malt. But the reason Dave should explain the reason we malt because first you've got the barley in the field, and it has to get into the beer.
Right. So the maltster is really the mysterious middleman that nobody seems to know about. But it's critical because you can't really take raw barley from the field and use it to extract the sugars that we want to ferment in the brewery to make into alcohol. The nature has made the barley kernel super resilient to survive being digested by birds and animals and just to be blown through fields. And so all that rich starch and sugar that we want to use in a brewery is kind of locked up in a very well-protected seed. And so the malting process is really just sprouting or germinating it, which triggers a whole bunch of biochemical reactions that break down the protein that holds the starches in place and breaks down the starch a little bit. And it's really just kind of part one of a two-part process in the brewery.
I've always liked to explain they take big, long chains of starch and making it into little short chains that yeast can fit in their mouth.
Right, which is, you know, part one happens in the malt house on the malting germinating floor, and then part two that we kind of stop it so it doesn't keep going. Otherwise, you'd end up with a barley plant and no fermentable sugar. Yeah. And then the brewer pretty much picks up right where we leave off by mashing it, and that just activates those same enzymes and keeps breaking down those starches.
And barley has a husk that's very hard to get off of the grain. And that's an important part because that allows the brewer to brew with it and separate the liquid from the grain. If we all had to brew with wheat or with rye, it would be a real mess.
It takes a lot longer to louder.
But you can brew. I mean, you can malt other grains also. Like a lot of gluten-free beers are getting to be more popular. But you can malt other grains like spelt.
Spelt, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And although rye actually has gluten. But I know, like, I've seen a lot more like spelt beers, which is gluten-free, right?
Right. Yeah, and we're getting a lot of requests from brewers for rye and wheat, even malted oats. There's a lot of interest right now in malted oats, especially because the oats are really helpful in contributing haze for the hazy beers, which are very popular right
Everybody
now.
Everybody loves that. So malt corn. Also, corn has no gluten, does it?
No, it doesn't have any gluten, but it has a lot of sugar, huh?
Has anyone ever malted Pinot Noir? Should we try that?
Yeah.
Should we give it a go? Yeah, I mean, honestly,
this is it.
This is a new marketing campaign. Right. We're going to do this.
But one of the big, the main reasons why we
put some cornflakes in there too.
I love cornflakes. We have these two on is because they are part of Outside Lands Music Festival that's going to be in August. But let's see. So the 10th, 11th, 12th?
10th, 11th, 12th. 10th, 11th, 12th,
10th, 11th, 12th. And Dave's been curating the Beer Lands part of Outside Lands for years. And Banshee Wines, your winery, has been on since like the beginning.
Yeah,
so what
first
is this,
year.
The 10th anniversary, right?
This is the 11th.
11th. Okay,
is
it 11? Last year was the big
Last year was 10.
And then how long have you been doing the Beer Lands?
So Beer Lands, this would be the 7th Beer Lands.
That you've been curating the beer for?
Well, it's the 7th Beer Lands and the 7th one.
Oh, Beer Lands. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
It's August 10th through 12th in Golden Gate Park, of course, the Outside Lands Festival. I want to talk about Banshee Wines. Baron Ziegler is here. I want to talk about your 2016 Pinot, which is luscious. But give us the history of Banshee.
Sure.
How long have you guys been around?
I started Banshee back in 2009 with my brother-in-law and another friend of ours. And literally, I mean, the idea was we're going to start a winery. We're going to borrow, beg, and steal from everybody we know to, you know, put our cash together and make a couple barrels of Pinot Noir. It was a side project. We all worked in the wine business, and we thought, hey, let's make wine. We sell wine. Let's give it a shot to make some wine. So we made about 600 cases in our first vintage. And I think the real drama for us was, hey, we got to sell this wine. You know, it's fun to make wine, but if we don't figure out a way to sell this, we're going to be drinking a lot of Pinot Noir for the next 2 years. So we got on the road and got out there and went to New York and Boston and Florida and Texas and tried to build the brand in terms of sales. And that was always my role. My partner was the winemaker, and I was the guy out there on the airplane getting customers behind the brand. And now after what is 9 years, we're in 47 states and 10 countries, and we're in every Whole Foods in the country. And
amazing.
It just grew really fast, grew really organically, and we're super lucky. So
I love the name. How'd you come up with it?
That's a good question. We were drunk, actually. That's it. That is the best ideas we've ever had happen when we were
here.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah. In this room, it's probably not the first time. We had all this wine. We had no name. We had no brand. We really didn't think this was going to be a business. And we sat down. We were like, all right, we're going to drink this out. We're going to figure out what this name is. We have to leave this dinner table with a name and a label. And we sat there, and my partner's dog started barking, and his wife said, "Your dog barks like a banshee." And there it is, banshee.
All right, we had no idea
what it meant. We didn't even know what a banshee was. We said, "There, that sounds pretty cool. Let's do that."
What is a banshee exactly?
It's a female spirit in the Celtic culture that shepherds people from life to death. So essentially when somebody dies, this female spirit comes and cries and weeps with the family of the person who has died, and then shepherds the spirit into the afterlife.
I think I saw her Saturday at my house, but I said, "No, I'm not ready yet. Go away. Yeah. Off you go."
Yep, exactly. She hangs around.
She'll be back.
Well, it's very cool. So your first vintage was?
Our first vintage was 2008. So we're now on our 10th harvest coming up here. And we've taken on a partner to help us scale. Like with Magnolia, you get to a point where you just want to scale, and working off of cash flow, you can't. So we took on a partner recently, Bill Foley, who I've known for a number of years, a good guy, a good friend, and he's helping us grow our business, and we're partners in the project, and we're going to take it even bigger than we have it now. So
very cool. They're both pouring, as they do pretty much every year, at the Outside Lands Festival the weekend. Florence and the Machine, Janice Jackson, Beck. I'm just naming off the people I've heard of.
Yeah.
Carly Rae Jepsen.
The Monophonics.
Oh, Father John Misty. Love him.
He's awesome.
It's always a great event at Golden Gate Park, and it's coming up in August. We got to take a break. Well, we can't because my producer is.
There's some new stuff happening this year. So they're not doing the Chocolate Lands. One year I brought in chocolate that they had for that. They're doing an Alice in Wonderland theme party. Oh, my God. That tea party.
A huge part of the park is being dedicated to an all-British Alice in Wonderland theme. And we have an import company as well, and we import wines. And we have a very cool opportunity to import a British sparkling wine that's going to be served to 65,000 people a day in an Alice in Wonderland, kind of cool mushroomy forest. It's going to be trippy, super trippy.
All over that.
Yeah.
Dave, is there going to be British beer for that over there?
There should be.
Make some calls.
Yes. Yeah, no, like
I would think so.
Yeah.
Even if not, now I know where I'm going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to sneak away from Beerlands and go up to, what is it called again?
It's Alice in Wonderland.
Which is called Alice in Wonderland?
It's in the forest.
Mark, cool. I want to hear about what you have to say about the beer that Dave brought. Brouhaha, the Drive Hop Monk Brouhaha. Dave McLean is here from Admiral Malting, Baron Ziegler from Banshee Wines, and of course, Mark Carpenter and Herlinda here. Dave, before I ask Mark to talk about the beer he tasted here, because they have no labels on them, they're just unlabeled silver cans.
Beautiful, huh? You guys have money to save on that.
It's a minimalist packaging.
It is minimalist. Okay, so what beer is this?
So this is a Pilsner from Seismic Brewery here in
Santa Rosa. Oh, we love Seismic, yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Alluvium Pilsner. These are your malt, the barley malts that they used?
Yeah, both the beers we've been drinking, the Duke of Manor is a Belgian pale, and then the Alluvium Pilsner is a Pilsner. And they both use Admiral malts. And the Alluvium just won a silver at the Cal State Fair a few weeks back. And it's one of the beers that's going to be at Outside Lands, which is why we brought it.
Of course. As Will Wines from Banshee Wines. Your thoughts, Mark, on the beer that you tasted?
Yeah, we've had Seismic on before, and they're great beers. They're great beers. And the first one we tried today was this pale ale. And you know how I feel about pale ales. It's a category that people should really look at. Don't get hung up on IPAs. They're good and have them, but you don't want to pass over the IPA or the pale ales.
Pale ales are my favorite, as you know.
There you go. Yeah. And this one is a Belgian pale ale, and so it's got the nice pale ale flavor with some Belgian yeast spiciness to it and some nice maltiness to it, and unfortunately, we don't have a sample of it made with somebody else's malt. We can see if the contribution of Dave's malt, but I'm sure, with the care they take with their malt and the freshness of it, it's a good beer.
And the other one?
The second one was a Pilsner. That's just a fabulous Pilsner. I mean, you can't fault it. It's just a very good Pilsner, easy to drink. You'd love it if you'd like a taste of it.
And that's from Seismic, too?
It is from Seismic.
Yeah, they're both from Seismic. And
okay, Herlinda, can I get just a little taste of the...
So one of the cool things, too, about their Admiral Malting being over in Alameda, where my dad was stationed on the Naval Air Base, is that it's sustainable, and also it's not having to come all the way across the ocean from England or Germany or Belgium for the malt, and which fits the footprint that any sustainable brewery is really wanting to hit with, like, saving, you know, fuel and energy and trucking it here and everything else, too,
which is
right?
a big part of Seismic's mission, for sure.
And so the other one's Seismic, too.
They're both Seismic, yes.
I love this Pilsner.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
It's just
wow.
Do you want a little more beer?
Yeah, you really haven't been able to make a truly local California beer until now, basically, because all the malt, you know, maybe it wasn't all coming from England or Germany. You know, that's where I got a lot of my malt from at Magnolia. But even else, any other malt was coming from Canada or upper Midwest for the most part. I mean, there are some anomalies. But for the most part, this is kind of the first time a lot of brewers are able to get malt that comes from barley that was kind of grown in their backyard.
Yeah, Baron Ziegler's here from Banshee Wines. Before we talk about this 2016 Pinot, which is wonderful, by the way.
Thank you.
Are you guys doing – you're not just doing Pinots, are you? Or are
no, we started with just Pinot, and the idea was to stick to Sonoma Coast, stick to sort of the cold climates where this marine layer where, you know, we sure. all living around here, we see that fog every morning. That's really the – that's the sweet spot for us in terms of grape growing. And we also use the sort of sustainable and organic practices in the vineyards, trying to focus on vineyards that are, you know, very natural, no chemicals, no herbicides, no pesticides. Chardonnay is another big thing for us, so we do Pinot and Chard. Those are our main varietals.
That's my favorite.
I know, it's shocking, a Sonoma County winery producing Pinot and Chard.
He loves Chard.
Oh, cool. I'll drop you off some.
Cool.
Chard is really something that for us has been, we love to drink it. We love, especially right now.
Me too, man.
Yeah. And rosé. Rosé is one of our other big things.
Oh, cool. Everybody's doing rosé now. You got to. But
every year we produce more and more, as much as our organic vineyards will give us. And every year we sell out by June 1st. We're sold out.
I believe it.
It's crazy.
We were just talking about Provence, where I just got back from, and he spent a lot of time there too. God, it's like rosé all day. Now they need to do a rosé beer. Somebody's got to be doing that,
ooh,
right?
Somebody will.
We have the fortitude in this room to do it, right?
Let's talk.
I think that fits right into the new kind of brute IPA category that's been emerging.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sort of extra dry, kind of bone dry IPA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rosé version of that is...
Does the brute mean that it's a little bit more bubbly, like a brute champagne, sparkling champagne?
It's more of a reference to the dryness factor.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of why it's being called that.
I love that.
It gets fermented all the way down to... almost nothing. You know, like all the residual sugar is pretty much taken out.
Baron, I love the label, the front label. Well, you've actually got a Banshee.
Well, you know,
or at least somebody's thought of it.
When we named this, we had no idea what the heck that thing was. It's a little bird. Imagine a bird with a broken neck that's kind of looking up in the sky.
That's
the weirdest
little
thing.
Yeah.
Same night, drinking heavily, came up with the name Banshee. We needed a label. And I was laying on the ground, and I looked up and I saw on the mantle of my partner's apartment in San Francisco, this little wooden statue that he had bought at a student art auction like 10 years prior. It's probably 2 feet long. And we said, man, that's kind of a weird bird. Let's put that on. And we had a friend sketch it out, and that's the label. We haven't touched it in 8 vintages. So it's about as organic and grassroots as you can possibly get.
I love it.
And it worked. For some reason, it continues to work, and we haven't touched the label in 8 vintages. So
where's the winery? I mean, you're in Healdsburg.
In Healdsburg. We have a tasting room right on the square in Healdsburg.
Oh, cool.
We make our wine here, actually right down the street in Valley of the Moon at a winery about halfway to Sonoma. And, you know, we're a small company. We don't have a lot of money. We don't have all the bells and whistles that a lot of these big guys have, so we've had to sort of borrow space in other people's wineries, custom crush.
Well, then you'll sell to Constellation and retire.
Yeah, no, if anybody from Constellation's listening, we're not for sale.
It's good stuff, Constellation.
We've always done it from the bootstraps, and that's how the company started, and that's how it'll continue to be.
And where are you making the wine?
Make it at a winery called Sugarloaf, which is right down here on 12. It's a great little winery that we're one of the biggest custom crush wineries in there. And, you know, basically we don't have to invest in the tanks, all the sort of equipment that we would need, which would be prohibitive for people like us. You know, we started this thing with $50,000, and we've just bankrolled it over and over and over as long as we could from cash flow. So, you know, we started from nothing, and we're sort of just doing the best we can with the money we have. And Sugarloaf has been a great partner for us, and... you know, now as we've partnered with Bill Foley. We're going to move some of the production to some of his facilities. He's got great wineries all over the place. Chalk Hill, which is right over here.
Yeah.
We're going to start making some of the Banshee wines at Chalk Hill, which is a state-of-the-art facility. So we're psyched about that.
And right. A question back to Outside Lands. So when you like for the stars that are coming on, like the musicians and stuff, like, you know, Dave, you've been doing this a long time. Like, do you like find out what kind of styles of beer they like? What do they want backstage for the wines as well? You know, is Janet, you know, Jackson going to? Oh, actually, I don't think she drinks actually. But I mean, like, do you, like, are there like musicians and stars that like I want a Pilsner or I want this, and like you get to pick out the beer that they're going to have or the wines, you know, that yeah, you've been doing the wines a long time.
That hasn't really made its way to Beerlands. I don't know if it's made its way to Winelands.
Every year. I pick my favorite artist, which last year was Belle and Sebastian, and I say I'm going to bring him a magnum of champagne, and I get backstage and I get up there on the stage. And every year I leave it, and I don't get to meet the band. So it's kind of a bummer, unfortunately.
One of these years.
One of these years.
If you keep doing it.
If Radiohead comes back, I'm going to be up there, and I'm going to give them whatever they want. So,
right.
Yeah. That's super cool. And then what about, like, so there's Clam Lands this year now,
Outside
too.
Clams.
Oh. Outside Clams.
Oh.
Outside Clams. Oh. Yeah. So
it's my favorite food in the world. Clams.
Really?
Oh, I eat clams constantly.
I think you should come to Outside Lands. There's 75,000 people at Outside Lands. You'd be right in your comfort zone there, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, a Saturday night at my house.
How many people do come this, like, now?
I think it's 65,000 per day.
Okay.
I think.
Oh, that's close.
Yeah.
Oh, it's huge. It's one of the biggest festivals in the country,
really.
I go really.
Every year, all 3 days.
I bet Mark has never been there.
You know,
I have not.
Nor have I.
I spent a lot of time going to music when I lived in the city, and when I moved up north here.
And when we were both younger.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
But it is an amazing festival. Okay, so the Outside Lands thing is huge. You've got beer land. You've got wine land. There's other brews and other wines available, obviously. Right? It's not just.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lots. They have Anchor Steam.
Really?
Anchor Steam on
alma mater.
Yes, it is.
Because Dave curates like a bunch of breweries, right? Who else is there?
Right. Yeah, we got 28 breweries at Beerlands. Another couple from up here, I guess. Well, I got Sonoma Springs also, in addition to Seismic from around here. A lot of new folks this year. You know, we've got and some returning favorites and a lot of San Francisco breweries. Really try to make the thing with Outside Lands is it does such a good job of capturing the sense of place. It is in Golden Gate Park, and they do such a nice job of making you feel like you're in San Francisco, in Golden Gate Park, on the edge of the world almost. And then the food that they curate is all very local food, which is unusual for a festival. And so I just try to follow suit and on the beer side. And so it's a lot of San Francisco breweries, a lot of inner Bay Area breweries, and then. You know, a few others from Northern California, but they're all California. They're all Northern California breweries.
I've got a list right here. Well, of course, Sierra Nevada.
We don't have
Heineken.
Time.
21st Amendment. Yeah.
On the wine side, we've got 40 wineries participating this year, mostly California. It's always been a focus on local, and that's, I think, one of the beauties of Outside Lands, local food, local wine. In addition to us, Banshee Wines, we've got Red Car. We've got our buddies at Slowdown Wines, which make an amazing wine called Sexual Chocolate. I'd highly recommend it. Our buddies also at Scribe Wines. The great thing about this group of wineries is that we're all friends. It's a very small, very tight-knit group of stories like us. It's not the big guys.
It's not the big
constellations
guys,
of the world. It's really the artisans, the local artisans.
Which is beautiful.
Which is pretty cool.
It's very cool. Outside Lands coming in August. We'll talk more about it when we get closer to that. We only got a minute. Banshee, you brought a Banshee 2016 Pinot Noir. And again, their tasting room is right on the square in Healdsburg. Quickly, just tell us about this. This is pretty young.
Yep.
My co-host on Wine Wednesday would say, I call him Dan Lay It Down Burger, and he would lay it down for probably 6 years or something. Not me, but... It's really good.
Thank you very much. Yeah, this is our this is really the wine we started with in 2008, our Sonoma County Pinot Noir, and it continues to be our most important and successful wine. Pinot Noir from a handful of vineyards, basically right here, Sonoma Mountain, all the way over to Jenner.
Nice.
All in the sort of Petaluma Wind Gap, cold area. Naturally fermented. We don't use any yeast, so all native yeast ferments from the bloom.
Can we get your stuff at Bottle Barn?
You certainly can. Yeah, right. Bottle Barn carries the wine. Our tasting room in Healdsburg has the wine as well. Online at BanshiWines.com, you can purchase it. So
there you go.
All over the place, hopefully.
Our friend Dave McLean with Admiral Malting now. Baron Ziegler with Banshee Wines. We're going to get you on a California Wine Country show on a Wednesday.
Awesome.
They're going to be pouring with lots of other folks at Outside Lands Music Festival. Thanks as always to Mark Carpenter and her Linda. All right, everyone count down the last five. Five, four, three,
two,
one. Good night.